When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The Connect on Post-Show Recap. That's right. We're back here. It's me, Chappelle. And we're here to talk about the color purple, not the one you're thinking of, though. No, we're talking about the same color purple that you're thinking of, but not the film, the color purple that you're thinking of. We're talking about the color purple, the 1985 film, the adaptation from Alice Walker's book, The Color Purple, the best-selling book, the Pulitzer Prize-winning book, all that stuff. But we're talking about where it all began at the original movie. And with me, Chappelle, is my co-host, my partner in crime, my tag team partner, Mari Forth. Mari, what's up?
Hello. I'm glad to do this. Is like pre-work, y'all. Like, get into it. You know, we're building it up. We're doing the original. We're talking about the original 1985 movie first. You know, get these cultural significance off about that. And then we're going to watch the musical, the new movie, the new musical, and then we're going to tell you about it. So this is fun. I feel like it's an event. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. We're doing a full rollout here for the color purple here. And this is a great time to do that because some of us had never seen the color purple and needed to get refreshed on what the subject matter was. Mari, would you say this is for the listeners who haven't seen it?
Yes, for the listeners.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. So, yeah, now that we've done our pre-homework, we also have with us, and I'm so happy to announce, but back with us again. It's been a long time coming, but we have, the missing part of our trio here at The Connect, LaTanya Starks. LaTanya, what's up? Welcome back.
I'm the missing link.
I
have returned from Africa where I was doing missionary work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Chappelle, I located all of your children.
Oh, thank you. Somebody did. I'm glad somebody did.
So yeah, I'm really happy to be here talking with you two today about this momentous movie, which, you know, in today's parlance would be called a prequel to yeah. the movie that we will soon be talking about.
Mm-hmm. Or the preboot? Because this is the, because yeah, the next one is a reboot. It's a preboot. Right?
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Pre-boot. It's wow. kind of a boot.
Yeah, it's the boot. We're going to talk the about boot. The boot, y'all. Yeah, the boot here on The Connect. But first and foremost, let me thank y'all for joining us here in 2024 for our new coverage that we have coming up. We got a lot of stuff coming your way this year. We're going to try to make it very exciting, but we are going to start here with The Color Purple. Thank you all for your reviews. We see you in the YouTube comments after we finish the seasons for Rap Shit and for other stuff. And we see y'all chiming in now that we're not on the air. So yeah, whenever we get a chance, we'll go in and read some of those reviews. Maybe when we do the spring preview, Mari, we'll maybe go in and touch base, because we want to shout out all the Connect listeners for sticking around with us and thugging it out. I mean, we've been here for a few shows, but every show I think we get a new listener base. Some people stay, some people tag in new people, but we're building a community here, and I just want to highlight everybody. How do you feel about that, Mari?
I completely agree, and we always want to let you know what's going on and what's coming up next, so you're not surprised like we normally are when something good drops.
Yes. Oh my God. LaTanya, there's always like prestige Black television that Black folk know about. Then there's like shows that Black people kind of heard about, and then there's shows that be Black and nobody knows about. And I think it's our job here on The Connect to talk about as much of those things as possible, but finding out about it is so difficult, you know, to find out about it beforehand, before the popularity takes off.
It is, because I feel like with, you know, more, I'll call them mainstream TV shows. White TV shows and movies, you get like a whole slew of articles that are just like what's coming up in the next 3 to 6 months, right? And then you get hype from it, and that you start to get the buildup of first there's a poster, then there's a something that's released on Twitter, and then there's a trailer, and then they do promotion. When it comes to our stuff, though, it's like maybe one of our publications might say, oh, this, here's a list of a couple things that may come out in the next 2 to 4 years. So keep an eye out for those.
Yeah. And then you keep an eye out, and then all of a sudden someone says, hey, have you been watching such and such? You're like, no, nah, I heard about it. It's like, yeah, well, it's on season 2. You're like, what? What? Exactly. What are you talking about? Yeah.
Every time.
And you know, Mari, we're good here to jump in on the last season of a show that we should have been talking about beforehand.
This is what we do. It's our staple here on The Connect. We're trying to do better. We're trying to not get to stuff on CP time. We're trying to get there as soon as it starts.
No, CP time is so accurate. I can't stand us. You know, we just, it's, sometimes it's just what we do, you know? But yes, so thank you all for listening. Thank you all for all your feedback. And please send us whatever suggestions you have. If you have eyes and ears on the street to what's coming up, the new popular stuff, what the new water cooler talk at the black places, obviously, then, you know, send us an email. What's our email address, y'all? I can never get it right.
Connect@postshowrecaps.com, I believe.
All right. Connect@postshowrecaps.com. Mm-hmm. You can also tweet each of us separately at Mari Talks Too Much with the number 2, at LK Starks, and at Chappelle's_show. So, y'all, we're going to talk about The Color Purple, the original 1985 adaptation of that book. But first, let's go ahead and take an ad break, and then we'll come back and kind of give you the rundown about where this all began right after this.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. Chumba. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, so we're back. Here's the thing. The color purple, we've all heard about it. We've all seen it. Or at least, you know, most of us have seen it. So before I even get into the plot and stuff, Mari, tell me, how did you go your whole black ass life not never seeing the color purple? What happened?
I never said I did not see the color purple. I have seen the color purple. It's just never the whole thing. And it's always in big chunks. And it was when I was like six. So it's not like I haven't seen it. It's just I have not seen it like from tip to tail, you know, and as an adult to actually appreciate it. So
that makes sense.
Don't put me on blast like that, Chappelle. Okay.
I just felt like I needed to get in front of the question because I know Latanya, you've seen the movie, right?
I've seen The Color Purple. Yeah. We had the VHS in my house growing up. I know. I'm really dating myself here, but my birthday does it for me anyway. So I might as well. That VHS, I think, broke in our house.
Hey.
We had to get another one. I was only four when this movie came out. So I don't know why I have such early thoughts of it. Like, it's one of those things that, you know, I should not have been watching when I was younger, but it was on in my house and the parents can only do so much. And then as I got older, I was just like, wait, this is really messed up and dark. And I hadn't watched it in years.
Oh, yeah. To your point and to Mari's point, I saw this when I was a kid, but it didn't feel as dark as it does when you watch it when you're an adult and can understand exactly what's happening here. So, watching it again with these grown ass eyes, I was like, this is a harrowing tale here. You know, I don't know if I would have described it as that if you had asked me a month ago, you know, especially honestly, looking at all the, I guess the promotion for the new Color Purple musical, like if you didn't know what you were going to go see, I think you're looking for like a joyous occasion with Fantasia and everybody singing and God is going to try to tell you something. I'm like, Color Purple seems fun. But to me, movie, it's not fun. This movie is very tragic throughout, and it has a you know, triumphant ending, I guess I should say. But I mean,
it takes so long to get there to the good part.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good movie, but I mean, you in the trenches for a very long time, Latanya.
It's 2 hours and 28 minutes, I think, something like that. It is an incredibly long movie. That, you know, watching it for the first time as like with adult eyes, I didn't realize how long the movie was. I looked, you know, at my Roku just to figure out how much time I had. And I was like, oh, I've only watched 20 minutes of this movie.
And five traumatic things have already happened. Like,
the only non-traumatic thing that happens in the opening is them playing like Patty Cake.
The
first 2 seconds of the movie. So it's very long, but I'm not surprised because it's Steven Spielberg.
Yeah. For me, it's like, yes, the length, but also the length of time that it spans and covers.
Yes.
And that length of time that it spans and covers, a lot of it is just in the mud. Like, it's so sad. And that's one of the reasons why I said, like, I've seen chunks of it because, I was the oldest kid. I was a solo child for the longest, and my parents didn't have like the VHSs and the DVDs and stuff like that. So when I did see it, it was over somebody else's house. And then when I did see it in my house, it was on TV. You know what I'm saying? It was on like TBS or something. Like, you know, they would play it on cable TV. But again, because the movie itself is 2.5 hours and then you put it on cable TV, it makes it like 3 hours. So I would always remember like turning it on, but then always like, you know what I'm saying, getting up and going somewhere else and coming back. And then like just always seeing bits and pieces of it, just completely bits and pieces. So it was really interesting to go back and watch it with my big old adult eyes here and watching it like forward to backwards and just being like, oh, this movie is sad. I said, this movie is sad, like so many times out loud, to the point where my husband was like, yeah.
Yeah. Like, did you miss that part? Yeah.
No. But I'm telling you. I thought the reception to like the musical, I know we can talk about this a little bit later, but like Chappelle was saying, like if you saw the commercials for the musical, you might think like, oh, this is light and happy. But I think the funny thing about that was when Black people were seeing the Black people who have already seen The Color Purple was seeing the trailer, they were getting mad because they were like, why would you try and make this fun and happy when this is a sad story? So I can't wait till we go and watch the musical and we talk about the musical to see the difference, because we really wanted to do this so we could like have a fresh compare and contrast, and to of course give you more content for here on The Connect.
of course the Color Purple, the novel, won the Pulitzer Prize for fiction in 1983, making Alice Walker the first Black woman to win that prize. It's won a number of other awards, and of course it was then adapted for this project as a film, you know, in 1985, directed by Steven Spielberg, starring Whoopi Goldberg, Danny Glover, and Oprah Winfrey, as some of the big names. I mean, there are a lot of names in this film for sure, yeah. But those are the three we're going to focus on the most, I'm sure. I mean, just broad strokes, like we said, it's a very sad movie, but LaTanya, Oprah on film, you know? Are we missing Oprah the actress? Because I feel like we might be missing something here.
I think the exact same thing, Chappelle. Like we just talked about, I haven't seen this movie in decades, probably. I was so blown away by her. Like, we talk about wanting our stars to make an entrance, right? She really makes an entrance. You can tell when she's on the screen. She is just such a lively presence. The way that she delivers lines are kind of unlike the way other people would deliver those same lines. And then when we get later into the story, which I know we'll talk about, and things get even more tragic for her, even past the Harpo stuff, just the change in her demeanor and the way that she carries herself. Yes, Oprah. Like, Oprah should be booked and busy for acting projects at all times if she wants to. I don't think she ever wants to leave Montecito if she has her druthers, but like, she was so good in this role.
Yeah, Mari, she's been in a number of films, but not nearly as much as far as I'm concerned, based off of her acting in this one. This was her breakout role as an actress, and she was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Actress in a Supporting Role, a Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actress, and a Los Angeles Film Critic Association Best Supporting Actress Award. Like, Oprah came out the gate swinging, literally and figuratively, in this movie.
Yeah, and again, like, all of my cultural concepts of The Color Purple, it was amazing going back and watching it and thinking of all of the things. Like, even if I don't necessarily remember watching it full on, I knew all of the references, you know. I knew all of the cultural references, the Harpo monologue and stuff like that, and I was like kind of shocked when that came like 30 minutes into the movie, like 40 minutes into the movie. And I was like, wait, so what happens now? Like, what
happens now? I thought that was the
climax. Yeah, exactly. It's just so funny because like that monologue, like, oh, a woman child is not safe in a house full of men. Like, how can I know that line for line and only have seen the movie like a few times? It's very interesting. And that's because that's a magnetism of Oprah. And when this movie is talked about, it's always Oprah and Whoopi. You know what I'm saying? So to see her in this and then to kind of realize as an adult that she really isn't in it for as long as you think she is, you know what I'm saying? Like, she's not in it for like the whole duration of the movie. She comes in and fits in spurts. So it's kind of like amazing that she did what she did in the time that she had in order to like get all of them awards, because she deserved every single one of them, like the nominations and stuff.
Oh yeah, I don't know who beat her for those awards, but they should have gave her something, you know. Something.
Right.
She does kind of take her foot off the gas. She's not in that many films. For someone who's been in the industry for as long as Oprah has, she doesn't do that much acting. But man, when she came out of the gate, this was some iconic like film acting here. As far as I was concerned, I've always known those same lines that you've known. You know, I watched it when I was a kid, and then people just in pop culture have always been quoting all the Oprah lines throughout this film. You know, you told Harpo to beat me, all that stuff. Like that's just iconic Oprah, but she's really just a big star in just the shortest amount of time. You know, you would swear she was in every scene the way when you think about The Color Purple, it's almost synonymous with her. But LaTanya,
can I just say something real quick?
Go ahead.
Person who won that Academy Award is named Peggy Ashcroft, and I don't know who that is.
She ain't Oprah.
He won it for something called Passage to India, and I just don't even know what to say. I'm sorry.
Okay, it looks like we might need to do that up right now because
since we have LaTanya here, we're gonna do The Color Purple versus Passage to India on the Connect of Costa Rica. We'll compare and contrast them and let you know if Oprah was robbed here. But also, LT, we got to talk about one of my faves, the GOAT herself, Miss EGOT. You know, Whoopi's here.
Whoopi's here.
There's a moment. Introduced. Whoopi has been introduced. And there's a moment in this film where Whoopi and Suge are talking, and she's like, "I haven't seen you smile. I haven't seen you smile." And Whoopi's covering her mouth. You know, she's covering her mouth. She's covering her mouth, and then finally she starts grinning. And I'm like, "There she is. There's Whoopi. Yeah. We got her back." Man, seeing Whoopi Goldberg in here is amazing. Whoopi can do no wrong in my eyes when it comes to like on film. She's one of the GOATs. And so I was very happy to be able to rewatch this as an adult and really appreciate the work of Whoopi Goldberg. But what did you think of her in this role as Celie?
I think that this is up there with one of the best acting debuts in the history of all acting.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
It's like to have this be her very first motion picture. And
I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, because even in the credits, it says introducing Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh,
I'm pretty sure that's
her first title role. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And she's carrying the whole movie.
Truly.
So I just don't even understand the kind of like innate talent that you would have to have. And also the wisdom and sensibility to be able to handle that type of pressure. Because this was a big studio film.
It was.
And you know, and there's something to be said about the fact that this is a Black story that's being handled by white people.
Like, yeah, Steven Spielberg.
And Kathleen Kennedy. I didn't even realize that was the case. She's now in charge of Star Wars, though. So I was like, what?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know how I feel about that.
Huge, yeah.
But back to Whoopi. You see so many parts of her in characters that she plays later. You know, like, when she's really feeling herself and she's hanging out with Suge, there's a little Dolores Van Cartier in there, right? Like, she is so good in this role. There are times that she, like, the way that she plays off of Danny Glover and just being so terrified of him and knowing she's got to dodge him and weave away from him at all given times. And to the point where there are some joyous moments for her, even in the midst of all of the strife she's going through, when she just sits in the kitchen and watches him try to cook, which is one of the most hilarious scenes in a movie, and it happens to be in this movie. Everything that she does on this screen is spellbinding, all the way down to the actual curse that she puts on him at the end of the movie. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and again, the curse, you know that word for word. I think it's because what I really noticed here watching it this time was there are like small comedic moments in here.
Yeah,
like just like LaTanya said with her sitting in the kitchen, but like stuff like at the Duke joint when Suge starts singing to her and she's like smiling to herself and she sticks her tongue out at the women when they start fighting and she's like, but I kind of want to stay and watch the fight, you know. Even when they're like going through his things and she turns around and there's a mannequin and she kind of shoves it to the side. It's like just the smallest little comedic hints that like don't take you out of the movie. It just kind of points to the resiliency of Black people and how we tend to like kind of use comedy to get us through traumatic stuff. It was very interesting. I wasn't expecting all the kind of small, very small light moments that kind of hint to where we get to at the end, you know?
Yeah, a lot of that is just carried on the back of Whoopi. We know that she is highly talented in drama and in comedy, and you just get that throughout. Whoopi had a Grammy by the time this dropped. Y'all know that, right? Like, she got like her first Grammy off of her, like, she got that Grammy, I believe, off of it was like a Broadway show or something like that. I think she did. And so, like, she had done, I think, Spook Show or something. But anyway, she had got her Grammy in like 1985. And so it's like, wait, what? Now she's in The Color Purple and she's already a Grammy winning actress or, you know, entertainer. Mm-hmm. And now she has a Golden Globe award for best actress in a motion picture. It doesn't sound like she got the Oscar for this one. So I wonder who beat her in the Golden Globe. Latoya, do you know? In the best actress, or maybe she didn't even get nominated. Do you know if Whoopi was up for an Academy Award that year?
I think she was. Let me hold one second.
Oh, so let's see if we can look into her. Because that might have to be something else for our verses as well. but yeah.
Because I just looked up a passage to Annie and I'm like, what? It's about colonization? And this is what we're going with? That makes sense. It does. It makes sense back then.
I'm trying to figure out if it would have been in the 86 Oscars or the 85 Oscars.
Either way, she does not win. And so I even wonder, you know, who is pulling that in? Because Whoopi gets her first Academy Award for Ghost, as we all know. And so,
Geraldine Page won.
For what?
For A Trip to Bountiful.
Okay, look.
Movies.
We gonna have to do our own Academy Awards here for our people, obviously.
I've been wanting to do that for a very long time. And I have to say that I unfortunately was wrong. It was, I looked at the wrong year in terms of when Oprah didn't win that Oscar. She actually lost to Angelica Houston for Prizzi's Honor.
Okay.
Which still...
These are all these movies I don't know, but I'll just chalk that up to cultural differences and me not being born at the time. So
that part, listen, it's cultural. Sometimes it just be cultural. The other leading actor in this, of course, is Danny Glover, who I feel like I've known Danny Glover my whole life. You know, it's like, he's been everything, especially when I was younger. But seeing Danny Glover in this role, I got a good hate into Danny Glover.
That's kind of funny because for me, like, maybe it's now that I'm watching it like at this age, I thought he did a really good job of not being Danny Glover in a sense. So I guess I cemented the like goofy cop, like older father, Danny Glover in my mind. Yeah. To the point where I'm like, oh, he's doing really good acting like an abusive husband. Like I didn't even, you know what I'm saying? Like I didn't transfer that over to Danny Glover himself. And he, you know, he did a good job too, in a way of like, not just making us mad at Mr., but also showing levels with Mr., the desperation whenever Shug was around, like the switch up, and then like, you know, him being regular mean versus when he was like mean, and you're like, oh, okay. You're like legit scared, you know. He hit it with levels. Like there are so many levels that he hit, and that's I do think that's hard to do with a character that's supposed to be hated. He did a very good job of raising the temperature and lowering it when it needs to be, so that when he was in that those times that he was supposed to be scary, he was scary, you know.
Yeah. Latanya, what do you think about Danny here?
Danny Glover was so good in this movie that for the rest of his career, there are members of my family who would not watch him in movies.
That's funny.
They were just like, he is evil. I don't care. And I'm like, acting. And they're like, I don't care.
No, I don't know. No. I don't know acting. Sorry.
I think that he did a fantastic job. I agree with Mari in terms of him showcasing some vulnerability. Because when Shug shows up, the tables really do turn. Like, it almost feels like he's the one that's being abused as opposed to what he's normally dishing out, which is interesting to watch as an audience because you don't know how to feel for that person. And it's always those types of characters that are played by actors like Danny Glover that make you feel something for their character, even though you don't want to. And then you look at his father, and that also brings a whole new dimension to it. You're just like, how else would he have ended up?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you see the humanity of Danny Glover at different times in this movie as Mr. or Albert or whatever, but you definitely like look at him as like such an abusive, horrible character. But I mean, but there's so many awful men in this film. Oh my God. Yeah. Like, as a man, I'm sitting here like, exactly. Y'all send us back, baby. What are y'all doing? Okay, so, you know, we've done a lot of the precursor here. One other thing I want to flag up is that the music was done by Quincy Jones, which, you know, now that we're leading into the next one and it is a musical, I'm really wondering how they're going to translate that. I don't know if Quincy Jones is involved in the new one at all.
Yeah, the new musical is based off the Broadway play, so I guess it would just depend on who did the music for the Broadway play.
Well, this was, I think, the first score that John Williams did not compose the film music for Steven Spielberg. So it was like, Quincy Jones had stepped out into a role that not many people had been touching, you know? And I think that is very interesting to show that Steven Spielberg might've been at the helm of this. But, you know, there was a lot of powerful Black people and historic Black people in this film and involved with it that makes it what we know of it today. So yeah. I just wanted to flag that up as well.
He was also a producer, an executive producer on the movie as well.
Oh my God. Yeah. Cool. Mm-hmm. So I think that the original obviously did way better in the real time than whatever the reboot has done from what I've been reading. But again, we haven't watched the reboot yet. So let's just stick to the plot here. Basically, we got Celie. She's it's the 1900s, and Celie is being abused and raped and bearing children for who she assumes is her father, alongside her sister, her younger, prettier sister, named Nettie, who we will see very little of in this film. Eventually, she gets married off to Mister, who has eyes for Nettie, and eventually, Pa or whatever their dad's name is, assumed dad. He's like, no, you can't have Nettie, but you can have Celie. She's ugly, and whatever, take her. And he does. Mister takes Celie to go raise his kids, who she's about the same age as, and to take care of him, living in squalor. I mean, the man had, I guess, he was a widower, and all his kids were there, but the wife is gone, and nobody cleans, nobody cooks, nobody does anything in that house. It's up to Celie to do it all. She's very much the Cinderella of this story. LaTanya, what are your thoughts about all of this?
The second I saw that kitchen, I would have left.
You see how thick that dirt was where she's like scrubbing the wall. You see the wallpaper underneath it? Yeah, where did that come from?
I don't know, but it's terrifying. Like the combination of the multiple children that have just been thrust upon me and the cleaning and I'm gone. I'm not completely sure on the ages for.
She's 14.
She's 14. Well,
that's two kids by 14, I believe.
Two kids by 14. Yeah. And now she's married.
Forced upon her.
Right. Yeah, and taken away from her, like she gave birth to two children and then she never saw them again. Her mom passes away and then she's basically sold off to Mister to be his
maid that he
can sleep with.
Human trafficking, I think, is what somebody rightfully reported. That's basically what it was. This is in 1909, I think the story begins, and basically Celie and Nettie, they have no control. Like women, girls back in this time period have no control. They're property of their fathers until they're property of their husbands. And the father that Celie was with decided to abuse her multiple times, put children in her, and then basically sell her off to Mister when he was done with her. And Mister didn't care. He just needed somebody to watch his kids and clean his house. And again, to have sex with whenever he wanted to, even though he never expressed an interest in her. And that's what we're introduced 10 minutes in. That is the harsh reality that we're introduced to 10 minutes into the film. And Celie is just forever being called ugly, like every 2 seconds.
All the
time. I cannot imagine like watching this as like a young adult and like not internalizing all of this as like a dark-skinned Black woman and stuff like that. And then like how the character is feeling as well. Mm-hmm. And I mean, even in today's society and references, it's like, I can't come outside. I got my Celie braids in, you know what I'm saying? Like when you're natural and stuff like that, it's like, it's so interesting to see like I said, all of the cultural touching points in this movie, and to see them move through Celia and how we see her go from a scared, frightened 14-year-old to a woman who has to deal with a lot of stuff for decades and decades and decades until she finally does see a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. And she goes from one prison to another as well. Yeah. She goes from the prison of Pa to, you know, the prison with Mister. Mm-hmm. And there's not only like no escape, but there's no one to go to cry for help, because this is so normalized by everybody in their community and everyone knows about it, but no one is doing anything about it. Like they're not completely isolated. I mean, she's way more isolated than most people, but they're not completely isolated from the community. They go to church. Mm-hmm. Like there's no one speaking up for these young women. I mean, the fact that the way Mr. saw Nettie in the first place was in church.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is really telling.
Yeah. And nobody stepped in, like you said. And it also hurts that by treating her like this, she is so meek and quiet. And she just has learned how to survive, right? Like she's just doing whatever it takes to make it through. And so she's not speaking up. She's not complaining. She's just taking it. And people are like, well, had you spoken up, maybe you'd be out. You know, like they're looking at her kind of like, well, girl, do something, you know. But she's just so, she's been through so much, and he's continuously putting through her. I mean, like all the things. And then the one person that she has for her is her sister, who she left behind, who finally shows up. Nettie runs away from home and she's like, hey, I come to kick it with y'all. I'm gonna hang out with y'all. We gonna party. Like, it's gonna be me and you from now on. And, you know, Mister is very happy to see Nettie because he's like, okay, he wanted Nettie in the first place. But this Celie-Nettie partnership does not last long at all until one day Mr. makes an advance at Nettie. He tries to rape her in the woods or back behind a tree while she's on her way to school. She gets the better of him. Yeah. And then he basically forces her out of the home. He drags her out kicking and screaming, where Celie is holding on for dear life, just holding on to the last little bit of lifeline that she has, the one loving face that she ever sees. And I mean, to the point where he's dragging her through the dirt, literally. On the way out, Nettie's just like, you know, only death is going to keep us apart. That's it. I will be back. I'm coming back for you. And then we don't see Nettie again until the end of the film. And this was just like the sad. I guess it's so sad.
I know. And I just want to shout out to Steven Spielberg for a lot of the shots. A lot of the shots in this movie were just so good. The long tracking shots of just watching Mr. like holding Nettie over his shoulder while Celia is like attached to his legs, and just so shocking, so traumatic. Spielberg does a great job throughout the movie in these really interesting shots. When he's tracking her down, when Mr.'s trying to catch up to Nettie. Mm-hmm. So scary. That was like scary. Like, what are you doing on that horse, sir, making those faces?
Gross.
Yeah. Terrible.
You're right, though. It's very well shot, because even though when you said, when the young actress is playing Celie and she's holding on and he's just dragging her and dragging her and dragging her, and she's scratching and clawing it. I'm like, I don't know if y'all did that in one take, but that was some physical acting right there from those two young women. Incredible. But yes, this is when Nettie and Celie finally, they separate, and she tells her, you know, in the meantime, she had taught Celie how to write, how to read, you know, and because these are all things that Celie was just at that house never learning. They're supposed to be in school learning these things. So she's teaching her all the things she needs to do to survive, basically. And she tells her, like, write me, because I can read now, you know, like, send a letter, and if I get it, you know, I'll know you're still alive. You know, we'll still have that bond. It's like the one thing she's holding on to. And she doesn't get a letter for the entire film until the very end, because Mister is just keeping it from her. He's completely just isolated her from all the people who love her and all the brightest spots in the world for her. And one of the things that I noticed, too, you had mentioned that Suge kind of put Mister in his place, but even Sophia, it seems like the idea of an assertive woman is just the thing that shuts Mr. up instantly, because Sophia comes in marching in years later. She is marrying Harpo. And when she is marching up, it's very clear that Sophia is not going to take none of Mr.'s nonsense. And he does not try her at all. It was incredible to watch. LaTanya, what is it about somebody like Sophia that just manages to make somebody who we've seen as an evil character like Mr. almost just cower in a corner like this?
I will say that it's possible that one part of it is that she was pregnant. That's being very generous to him.
Very.
I think that the real reason is just what I was like taught growing up, which is that the fastest way to get rid of a bully is to stand up to them, because they just don't expect any, they think they're all big and bad and they don't expect anybody else to call them on it. I think that also he probably recognized that, you know, it's one of those like pick on someone your own size kind of things. He probably recognized that he would get his ass beat if he messed with her. Whereas like someone like Seeley, who he got when he was so young, he groomed and trained her so that she's like a mouse. She's so meek around the house and doesn't even talk back to him in any way. So that's not a fair fight. And not that any fight where a man beats a woman or any partner beats another partner is fair. I just mean in terms of Seeley's not going to put up a fight. Seeley's terrified. However, that's not the case with Sophia. Sophia is ready to go and tells him so.
Yeah. She's about that action, Mari.
Yeah. Sophia just like bursts on the scene. And it was really interesting to watch and seeing Harpo like grown up now. And watching Sophia kind of just run roughshod over Harpo was actually like very, it was very entertaining to see, because again, up until this point, we're just seeing the, you know, intimate partner violence between Seeley and Mister, and it feels like, you know, women can't make their own way in this world. And Sophia kind of comes in and is like, no, I make my own way. And you can tell that Harpo does love her. And But their relationship, as seen from outsiders, seems weird, because clearly Harpo is not quote unquote controlling Sophia. So when Mr. tells Harpo that he should beat Sophia, and then Seeley kind of echoes it because that's all she's known, it was one of those moments I was like, oh no, you know. But Sophia was not, she's like, this won't be a beating, this is going to be a fight. And they both came away with some lumps, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, this iconic line, you told Harpo to beat me, and then we get, you know,
one of the, my life I had to fight.
I had to fight my daddy, I had to fight my uncles, I had to fight my brothers, all men, you know, that she's been like, I've been having to fight, and now I'm grown, and you think in my own home, I'm gonna let this man beat up on me. And you, Seeley, you told him to, you helped push this narrative. Like, I'm, it's not happening. I will kill that man before I let him touch me like that. And I was like, well, she said it, you know, and I think. I think Seeley needs to see people like Sophia in her life, because even from the film standpoint, like, Nettie wasn't getting that kind of smoke from Mister. You know, he didn't he didn't beat up Nettie. Nettie kicked him to get her off him. I mean, to get him off her. He didn't go beat Nettie. You know, he dragged her out of there, but he didn't beat on her. He was taking out all his frustration on Seeley, and so was their dad at first too. So we need to see that there are other people outside of this. They're like, nah, you can stand up for yourself. And I think this was just one of those moments where, she's going to earn, like, Sophia's going to earn the respect of Seeley for the rest of their lives based off of this moment, LaTanya.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I believe that, like, to a weird degree, she already respected her, but just thought this is the way the world works. Like, there is maybe not a lot of crossover between these two things, but, like, The Color Purple and the show Fargo, but this season of Fargo...
Versus.
Everything can't be versus. But this season on Fargo, we're dealing with a character named Roy Tillman, who is a polygamist who is very abusive to his wife, and his current wife told him to go and beat up his ex-wife, essentially because she was trying to get some of the heat off of herself. And I think that, like, in these types of situations, when it comes to abused women, if abuse is all they know, then they might think that the best advice for, you know, someone to, like, temper a human being is for them to, you know, is to abuse them. And it's terrible, but it's, like, all they know. I do think that after this, with Sophia coming to her, her seeing the bruises themselves also probably was like a big wake-up call for her. Like, this actually did happen. And the person that I said it should happen to is standing in front of me.
And Harpo and Sophia, they become an abusive couple. You know, they have a bunch of kids and they fight. They fight because she's like, I'm not going to be abused. And I'm sure Mr. then trained Harpo up to think he's not going to get abused. And so they fight until Sophia says, I'm leaving. And she does. And she waves goodbye with the three kids and says, I'm leaving. Because what you will see, though, is that Sophia had a support system when
she did.
Yes, that's true.
Like,
her family.
A family of people who were not going to take that. And so she was not going to take it either. And it just goes to show you how isolated, you know, Celie was. From people who loved and cared about her. And so
abusers look for people like that.
That's true. That is true. Again, she went from one abuser to the next. So that's all she's known is captivity and abuse. Before I take the ad break, let's just go ahead and talk about this this next rising character we have here in Miss Suge Avery. Which this is a controversial character, y'all, because for a 1985 film, things got a little gay, LaTanya. It's got a little homosexual.
A little bit queer.
Yeah.
You mentioned the controversy surrounding this movie in 1985. Like, one of the big controversies had to do with this scene. And it was a combination of they're showing too much on one end and on the other end being like, this is a racing queer story elements. Like, more happened in the book. We want more. So there was controversy about a lot of other things as well. But this was a big spot of controversy. People were saying to boycott the movie because of this. And nothing really happened. But if you look at it in terms of the timeline of when this movie was made, they weren't going to be able to, like, make blue as the warmest color. You know what I mean? There was only a certain amount of things that they were going to be able to get away with. And I think even having this scene at all in the movie is something of an awakening for a lot of people who watch the movie and may or may not have understood their own sexuality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And honestly, I was like, it wasn't much. Like, how much happened? Maybe again, it's the sensitivities of, you know, watching from a 2024 perspective. But I was like, there's barely anything here for it to be really controversial at all.
The controversy starts with, one, there's this white man telling this black story, right? And then they say, okay, well, there's a lot of black stereotypes in here. Is this white man the reason why there's these black stereotypes? And then on top of all of that, there's some gay stuff in the book, y'all. There's a lesbian relationship. And so Steven Spielberg is thinking, I don't even know if I can get this to PG-13 if I include all the stuff that's in the book. So he waters it down to the point where this is what we get. And ultimately, it still is, like, banned in certain places. Like, they were not letting people watch this movie. It was very controversial at the time.
I was just going to say, you've got to think of the 80s, like the height of the AIDS epidemic. And here is a same-sex relationship, or at least the hinting of a same-sex relationship on screen. There are too many conservatives in power for that.
This just wasn't going to fly. I mean, it did fly, but, you know, people was going to complain about it for sure. Suge shows up, and I was very confused about how Suge shows up. Now, Mr. clearly is looking at Suge. He's got her poster up on his mirror. He wants to see her. Celie been looking at Suge too, like, well, who are you? You know, type. But then at some point, a tornado or a storm like happens, and then somehow she's in the back of Mr.'s car. LaTanya, what did I miss?
I think they needed to move along the plot. I'm not sure either. All of a sudden she was there and I was like, okay. Yeah. I don't know. I'm sorry.
No, it's like she pulls up in the back of the wagon or whatever, and it's like, look, Suge is here. Immediately she lays eyes on Celie and she's like, oh, you ugly. And we know that Suge and Mister must have had some interactions in the past. Because Suge was a little hate, she was hating on Celie a little bit, like, who is this new woman all in Mister's spot? But the interaction between Suge and Mister and Celie and Mister could be no further than different. Like this is a night and day. You know, like Celie's over there in the corner, just hoping that he doesn't hit her, hoping that he doesn't yell, not making too much noise. Suge comes in and she demands everything, and Mister is running around like a simp, Mari.
Yeah. He's cooking for her, which he clearly can't do, because as Celie watches him try to do it, he completely messes it up, because when he takes the food in there, Suge throws it at the wall. Like, that's how confident that Suge is with her in her relationship with Mister, that she can be the one who's throwing stuff against the wall and yelling at him. He's like, oh, I'm so sorry. It's a weird type of like just back and forth that you're seeing. And then to see that Celie goes and makes the food and Suge actually likes it, and it kind of starts off how they become friends, you know, even though Suge admits that she was kind of jealous in the beginning, because, you know, she was actually married with Mister and stuff like that. It's so interesting how Suge kind of just really changes the dynamic in the house when she shows up, and apparently she's supposed to be like sick too when she shows up at some place.
Yeah,
yeah.
We don't know
they said that's women's disease.
That women's disease, which that I don't know. What is that?
Yeah, I think that's lesbian. I think the man was trying to say something about her. But no, she did have an ailment, and of course Celie is there to nurse her back to health, and they get to be good friends to the point where when Harpo opens his juke joint with his new girlfriend Squeak, you know, Suge is there performing, and she is singing a song specifically for Celie. Now, the crowd kind of parts here, and people are looking like, what's going on right here? But nobody seems to throw up a big fuss, probably because now Sophia's over there beating Squeak ass. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, we go from, you know, Suge showing up like a whirlwind in his home, and then eventually Celie and Suge are sharing a very tender moment. There was some kissing going on, some forehead kissing, some cheek kissing, and then a couple kisses on the lip, LaTanya. And I know everybody at home just fainted and just died, you know, too much homosexuality on screen.
I mean, I didn't faint. I was okay. But I'm sure that a lot of people needed their fainting couches for that.
Yeah.
It was almost nothing. That's an ongoing thing. Because, like, of what I have seen so far about the new movie, that is another criticism, the same criticism, which is that it doesn't go far enough in, like, all of the scenes about queerness. Yeah. So, you know, tale as old as time, I guess.
Tale as old as time. Like, it's a lot of implied queerness. I think the song itself is implied queerness as well.
Yeah.
It's like, I see you, you see me, I see you, we see you. type business. But I'm like looking at it, and I didn't realize that Squeak herself has a bigger role in the book than she actually has in this movie. Actually,
really?
Yeah, Squeak. because of course, another like culturally prescient thing in the Black community. Sophia and Harpo they're still married, but they're not together. So, they each have a boyfriend and a girlfriend, but Squeak is his girlfriend. They initially, her and Sophia initially don't get along because they start fighting. But Squeak is actually one of the people who actually helps Sophia get out of prison later in the book. Mm. And she pays dearly for it, because she actually ends up getting raped as well. So it's just kind of like, I think they cut it because it would have been too much. But Squeak and Sophia do end up becoming friends. And it's, again, implied in the movie, because at the end, they're all together. But we don't, you know, they don't necessarily show it. And again, it's a two and a half hour movie. So there's probably another reason why they cut that out. Mm-hmm. But I found that very interesting. That, like, there we see so many different aspects of Black women's lives in this time period, and very rarely was it anything good.
Yeah, yeah. Eventually, Suge and Celie, they become great friends, but Suge has to go to Memphis, and Celie thinks she's going to go with her, but Celie is incorrect. God. You know, she is about to get in the car, and Mr. like, excuse me, ma'am, where do you think you're going? And Celie is like, damn, and you're
she,
right.
She just passes out.
She collapses.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was the last bit of hope that she had left.
That timing was really good, though. Again, like Whitney.
Yeah.
Whoopi's like testament. Yeah. Just like, just crumple into the ground. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. She was done. She was down bad, y'all.
It's slightly comedic. Yeah.
A little bit, but also damn, you know?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
But then I think this is a good point to take another ad break. We'll do the ad break here, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about Sophia going to jail, because the story is about to take a turn that I don't think anybody suspects on the first watch, but we'll come back right after this. All right. So Sophia becomes the new star of the film, basically, right here, because she goes to market and everything is fine. Everything is normal. It's fine. We have Sophia. We're watching her because we know she's very assertive. And she gets complimented by the mayor's wife, Miss Millie. Miss Millie's like, are you the maid? And Sophia says, hell no, I ain't the maid. And that hell no, you got to remember what time this is, what period of time this is. She gets to talking crazy. They talking crazy. That hell no really ticked them off. The mayor slaps her in the face and she punches them because that's what Sophia does. She's later on beat up by the townspeople, punched in the face by looked like the sheriff, and then she's arrested and thrown in jail for 8 years. They dragged this woman away from her kids for 8 years because she said hell no to the white lady. And she did punch the mayor. I'll give her that too, but whatever. So when she comes out of jail, she is ordered to be Miss Millie's maid. And now the very thing that she was saying hell no about is actually her new sentence in life, is that she has to go and live out that horror of being a maid for somebody. And so now we've seen someone like Sophia, who was so assertive, now being silenced and being put in a very similar position as Celie was in this film, Mari.
Yeah, it's like the humbling of Sophia, like the one character, the one Black woman character who seems to have some sort of power over herself and her life. It gets stripped away from her. And honestly, at that point, we're all just, I know I was just thankful that she didn't die from punching the mayor. I'm like, oh, thank God. She only got, you know, to spend 8 years in prison. Because I was scared for her in that moment after seeing her punch the mayor and all the townfolk coming around and screaming horrific racist stuff at her and her just telling, get my kids out of here. That was scary. And to see her come out, you know, scarred, broken, like she has a limp now because probably all of her injuries, and now forced to work for the lady she didn't want to work for. It's so sad and so unbearable. And then again, also the carrot being dangled of, oh, you can go and see your kids on Christmas, and they get there and that white lady can't drive herself back home. So, and she gets into full panic mode, thinking that the men who are there trying to help her are trying to harm her. And Sophia got to go back, like, again, and it wasn't a funny moment, again, because the backdrop is really bad. But the moment that Sophia is in there with her family and they're like, yeah, and they're all excited, and she's taking her coat off slowly, and then they realize that there's something going on outside, and they're like, they're all looking at the camera and all the put her coat right back on. It's just like, man, it just to show you how powerless Sophia is, was just like, it gets to your heart, you know?
Yeah. LaTanya, have you ever seen white people this mad at Oprah Winfrey before? This normally her target.
Actually. Yeah. After she did that interview with Meghan and Harry, there was an entire continent of white people that were just like, no.
She normally had a pretty good reputation amongst the white people. Seeing them call her the fat Black nigger here on this what a, for Oprah? Okay, I must have took some strong acting from some of them, not all of them, some of them. So Suge returns to Celie and Mr.'s home eventually with her new husband, Grady. and they're in town for business. And Grady and Mister are like, they okay. Right. Grady and Mister are kind of hitting it off. They're very drunk and friendly.
And I hit that. You hit that. I hit that. Ew.
Yeah.
They're Eskimo brothers. You know?
Basically. Anyway. And So while this is happening, Mister is distracted. And Suge finally gets to check the mailbox because for all these decades, Celie has never been able to go see if her sister has been writing her any letters. And so now that Suge has done it, she found that there is a letter from Nettie, and she is working for a couple who actually adopted Celie's kids. So this thing just out of nowhere just comes around the horn. And now, like, we have a glimmer of hope. You know, Nettie knows how to read. I mean, Nettie has taught Celie how to read. So now Celie can read this letter, and Suge and Celie go and find all of Nettie's old letters as well. So now we get most of the second half of this film is just Nettie catching Celie up on all the things that she's missed. I mean, she traveled to Africa, the kids, all these other things. LaTanya, this montage here is so good because we see that Celie is now, she has something to live for. You know, she's walking around reading these letters everywhere. I mean, in church, she's hiding it in the Bible. She just, it sounds like she finally found some happiness in all of this darkness that she's been experiencing her whole life.
It's amazing that she's able to have these moments, because it almost feels like with each letter, she gains another year of her life back, if that makes any sense. Like, she, there's so much about her, like herself, that she doesn't know. And it's only through the power of reading, which thank God her sister taught her before she was sent away, that she's able to get all of this information. I mean, the idea of having two kids at such a young age, having them ripped away from you, and you never know, like, she, you go around making up stories like she does when she sees that woman in the store and that has a baby, and the woman calls the baby Olivia. She thinks that's her child, and who knows, it very well could have been. But like, you just go around making stories. Every baby that you see, you're like, that could be mine. For her to finally get some kind of closure from these letters and to get some hope from them as well, because she lives such a hopeless existence, is so gratifying to see.
Yeah. This is, and I think that it also empowers Celie to do some of the things that she does in the later portion of this film as well, because one thing we do know is that Mr. likes for Celie to shave him up with the straight blade, you know, which is bold, very bold for somebody who is abusing somebody bold to hand him a weapon. Wild decisions here from Mr. But okay, so we've seen that Celie has been doing this for a number of years. He says, if you cut me, I'll kill you, you know, and so she's very, very careful. But this particular time, something's different. Something is just not the same. Celie is like sharpening the blade, but she got a look on her face that we're like, I don't know. This doesn't look like the person who just wants to shave this man. And even Suge knows it's coming, because Suge is running for miles. I mean, it looked like she's just like 100-yard dad. Like, she's gone trying to catch her. Mari, Celie was about to kill Mister.
I hope so, because like, this is right after she finds out he has been willfully keeping her sister's letters away from her. She's enjoying reading them, and he just slaps her out of nowhere, like, get your head in the game and come shave me. And it's like, oops, I slipped. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, big smile like under his neck. And I thought it was so interesting that Suge got there right in time. She's like, oh, that blade don't look sharp enough. And my biggest thought, and I want to ask you, Chappelle, do you think Mr. knew how close he was coming to the other world?
I don't think he does. I think if you know someone's about to try to kill you, you at that point, they got to go. You know, like, you know, you don't then go to sleep the next night. You know, like, you can't beat somebody out of killing you. You know, once they decide they're going to kill you, it's either you or them. I don't think he knew. I think that he kind of just took Suge's word for it, because he's so infatuated by Suge that when Suge kind of was like, ha ha, no, we just kidding, LOL. You know, he's like, all right, I guess. You know, Suge just had something on Mr. that wouldn't allow him to really see what was happening with Celie's development here, because is it like very soon after they're all at dinner, or lunch or whatever the case is. It's a big family meal. And Sophia's there, you know.
Squeak is there.
You know, and it's like a family meal, but it's crazy because Harpo is there. The kids is there.
Like, I'd be like, where are all these kids coming from? And then they
everybody
they
had them, like three or four, right?
Three or four kids at varying ages that I'm just like, who's y'all mama and daddy?
Yeah. Point everybody out. Go stand by your people, you know?
Because we know Celie doesn't have any more kids. She doesn't have any kids by Mr. So I'm just like, who are these
people? Yeah. And we get Celie finally speaking up against Mr. after all his years of abuse. Suge is happy to see this, but Sophia has the biggest laugh because she's like, woo, you know? I remember when I used to speak up, girl. Like, this is good. It's about time you didn't line this man up. But LaTanya Celie, she does not kill Mister when she has the blade at his neck, but she does pull a knife on him this time at the family gathering. And it's Sophia who snaps back and like, hey, chill out, because I don't want you to end up where I ended up. What'd you think about this scene, LaTanya?
I thought that it was really powerful. And I think that it being Sophia there to stop Celie from committing violence, when Celie was the one who told her husband to visit violence upon Sophia, was really poignant and interesting in terms of Sophia's character as well. Like, after having gone through all that, to still be able to forgive and to teach others to forgive is very important. For Celie, she's spent her entire life in prisons. So the last thing that she needs is to actually be sentenced to prison for the murder of this man when she can just walk away. And something about Sophia knows that if you stand up to him and he knows that the rest of us are with you, he'll just let you go.
Yeah. And I think this moment from Celie empowers Sophia to speak up, which really does empower everybody else. I mean, Squeak has a real name, y'all. It's Mary Agnes. Who knew? Yeah.
Right. And Mr.'s paw there at the table was just making snide, rude comments, was just, oh, it was too much. But I'm so glad that Celie and Squeak were able to leave with Suge and Grady to Memphis and to finally break free of this prison. And not only break free, but to curse Mr. as she goes. And she said, until you do right by me, everything you touch is gonna, you know, turn to shit. Basically, that's not what she said, but you know what I'm saying.
That's what she said. Yeah. Word for word, bar for bar. You heard it.
That's what she said.
Yeah. Yeah, so years later, Suge reunites with her father, who is a pastor, and as we know, is probably like, hey, you out here living the fast life, girl. You out here kissing women and singing songs in the juke joint, you know? no daughter of mine. Mister has become a lonely drunk and has basically just let his whole house and farm fall apart because guess who was holding it together? Celie was holding it together. And she hit him with the curse. So it was like, bow, bow. 1-2 punch.
And I think Harpo and Sophia, it seems like they left too. Like, they probably went to stay with Sophia's family.
Yeah.
None of their kids was there. None of that.
Nope. Harpo is running the juke joint. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's got his own thing going. It seems like that curse is really starting to affect Mr. Maybe he needs to do right by Celie. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's something he could do to make things up to her. I just don't know what that could be.
What can he possibly do?
Yeah. What can he possibly do?
What could he possibly say? It's two words.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So upon Celie's father passing, she finally learns that from her father's young child bride widow that this wasn't her dad at all. It wasn't her biological father. When her mom died, she went and got with Pa, and Pa took the property once mom died. So now that he's gone, Celie is the person who will inherit the property, Celie and Nettie. And so now she gets to go to the funeral, and all these good things are just falling into her lap now. She has property. She knows mm-hmm. that her daddy, it did not, you know, like it's not her actual biological father. She knows her kids are not her siblings. So much good that finally is coming mm-hmm. in this woman's life. I think this is the most positive we've talked about this whole time in this recap, which just goes to show you how dark this film really is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And can you imagine that being the solace? Is like after you've been raped, like, that, at least, you know, at 14, at least, yeah, at least it was not my father's my children dad. That I had. Yeah, my real dad. Like, that's so incredibly sad, but yeah. It's better than the alternative.
Mm-hmm. Celie begins to operate a tailor shop, and then we see Mr. get a letter from the U.S. Immigration and Naturalization Service addressed to Celie. He goes and gets his money out of the stash in the chicken coop, and then he it looks like he sends for Nettie and her family to come meet Celie and for her to meet her children from Africa. And so I think he did it, y'all. I think he did right by her. Yeah, mm-hmm. maybe. Is that what we're supposed to believe? Because I mean,
so he broke the curse.
He took a step.
He could just die. Yeah, like it'd be fine if he just died. It's okay.
Yeah. We're not gonna give him.
It was kudos. The least he could do.
The least, yeah, exactly.
LaTanya, mm-hmm. the scene where Nettie shows up with the family that Celie never knew. Tell me you cried. You cried a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, you kind of have to. You kind of have to.
Yeah, I did. It's just those adult children saying mama that got mm-hmm. me. It's yep. really mm-hmm. hard when you don't have a relationship with your parents until you get older to figure out how to navigate that. And I know that from experience. I mean, I knew who my parents were. I wasn't sent to Africa and raised by someone else. Mm-hmm. But I haven't really had like that great of a relationship with my parents until like around now-ish. So mm-hmm. just the idea of seeing these two adult children from their side, you know, they were raised knowing that their mother is out there somewhere. And finally, here she is, right? And mm-hmm. then on Celie's side, I just put myself in her shoes and imagine like all of the like warm, glowy feeling that she had finally being able to hold her children again. She's only ever held them once, if that, and then they right. were taken away from her. And now they're here and they're so excited to see her. Like, I think it's a combination for me of those thoughts, but like the kids really sell this performance. They're adults, but like mm-hmm. they're her kids. They really sell it because of how happy they are to see her.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Mari, this is the end of the film. I mean, we get the family mm-hmm. back. We have Celie and Nettie having doing their hand game. Me and you will mm-hmm. never part. Mm-hmm. Like, and then as the credits start to roll, and we have what we will know as an historic film, historic film adaptation of a book that will now lead to our next episode of The Connect, where we talk about the musical reboot. What'd you think, Mari? First time watching The Color Purple? What'd you think?
Anyways, I mean, it was a great. It is a great story of like perseverance and stuff like that. It's also like kind of weird to me that it's like I hope we're not normalizing this type of trauma. You know what I'm saying? Like with this being a classic Black movie that everybody can reference and know about, is like, is it internalizing the struggle for Black women, and that yes, Black women will always have to struggle, as opposed to like thinking of ways that we could stop this from happening. But all that to say, you instantly understand why it's a classic. It tells our stories. Like, it, you know what I'm saying? It tells a story that is different from what we see in the mainstream. It's like a historical time capsule from the early 1900s, because it spans like 40 years, or early 1900s to like 1940 something, or something to that effect. Like, and it's just, it's like a snapshot of what life could have been like, and what a lot of people probably did go through. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm pretty sure Alice Walker did a lot of research for this book, and probably anecdotal, you know, from her own family and stuff like that, you know? And so I completely understand why it's a classic. It's shining a spotlight on our community. It might not be the best, but at least our stories are being told here.
Exactly. And this film goes on to receive 11 Academy Award nominations and wins zero. So, you know, Missy Pete was pissed.
Yeah.
Best picture, best actress, best supporting actress, best screenplay based on a material from another medium, best art direction, best cinematography, best costume design, best makeup, best original score, best original song. Nothing.
Oh my gosh, nothing.
Nothing.
If you follow the Academy Awards, it makes total sense.
It makes a lot of sense. It truly does, but it's still quite unbelievable when you watch like how good of a masterpiece it is.
Yeah, and Steven Spielberg receives his first Directors Guild of America award at the 38th award ceremony for outstanding directorial achievement in motion pictures here. And he was the first director to win that award without ever being nominated for the Academy Award for Best Director. So funny is that, huh? He gets that award and the Academy was like, nah, you're good over here. So there you go. This is The Color Purple, y'all, 1985. LaTanya? Anything else we got to say about the movie before we go into the musical?
No, I don't think so. I other than, you know, I'm excited for the musical. I have not seen the play itself, but I do know some of the songs from it just because of watching the Tonys. So I'm over the moon and excited to hear Fantasia sing "I'm Here." I love that song so much. It's so good. I'm just gonna be a puddle in the movie theater and they're gonna have to come and like mop me up.
I have literally no clue about anything going into this new. This is a musical adaptation of the Broadway play that is an adaptation of this movie, which is an adaptation of the book.
There you go. Hey, there you go. And that is what is coming up next on the Connect on Post Show Recaps. And so thank y'all for joining us for this coverage of The Color Purple, the original, before all those adaptations of the adaptations. Mari, LaTanya, it's good to have y'all back. LaTanya, tell everybody what you've been up to, where you've been, where they can find you. You know, we missed you here on the Connect.
I miss being here. This was wonderful. So yeah, I'm doing a couple of other things. One of the things I'm doing is covering season 5 of Fargo, as I mentioned earlier, with Mike Bloom and Grace Leader. And we are having a great time talking about a really messed up season of television. So come and tune into that. I also very soon will be starting the next round of Versus. Yes, Versus is back, only this time it's going to be me and Mike Bloom instead of me and Josh. And we're going to be doing a Versus of True Detective season 1 versus the newest season of True Detective, The Night Country, which I have screeners for and should probably watch. It's supposed to be really, really good. It's supposed to be the best True Detective season since season 1. So hopefully that all lives up to the hype. That, I think, is about it. But you can find me on Twitter at LK Starks or on Instagram at Stormborn1222.
And Mari, what about you? What you got going on? What's happening over there on Crime Scene?
Yes, of course. Yes, it is. Every Tuesday, me and Sarah Carradine bring true crime to RHAP over on the Crime Scene podcast. This week, we did just drop the episode with Chappelle. What did we talk about, Chappelle?
It was awful. It was a good thing, but it was like a horrible story, but I can't remember what it was. We talk about so much.
It was awful, though.
It was the worst. I too. But whatever. Go to robhasawebsite.com/crimefeed in order to listen to Crime Scene. We talked about things. It's okay. Again,
Hell Camp. The team.
Hell Camp.
Hell Camp.
Yes.
Hell Camp.
That was awful. Yes,
it was.
Dear God.
That was bad. But it's okay. So if you're into true crime, but like not like all the gory stuff, you can definitely go check out Crime Scene. We have great discussions there about how true crime documentaries, docuseries are done. And we give them ratings and we tell you if you should watch it as well. So that's fun. You can also catch me on the Nothing But Netflix this week as well. Me and Sarah were on Nothing But Netflix discussing the Society of the Snow with Chappelle and Rob. Yes. So that was
on Yellow Jackets. Well.
Yeah.
Right.
Also awful.
unfun yellow jackets is what
unfun,
I call them.
Yes. And so you can follow me on Twitter at Mari Talks Too Much. That's too like the number two. And also me and Mascot, we're back. Wrestling Wrap Up is Yay. Back. We are better than ever. Just like Eric Bischoff. And it is the road to WrestleMania. We are lining up some really good guests for this season, and we plan to be at WrestleMania 40. So definitely come along for the ride. Check it out. We are going to bring you some really big things. So go to robhasawebsite.com/wrestlingfeed in order to subscribe over there. Yes, Black people like wrestling, and we can talk about it. So come watch
that part. And as for me, I am over on Rob Has a Podcast on the Nothing But Netflix feed. As you know, talking about Netflix shows. We had Mari and Sarah on to talk about the people getting crashed into the mountain and eating each other. It was crazy. But that was a Society of the Snow. Rob and I are still on Post Show Recaps doing our Suits coverage, our Suits finale of our series coverage, daily series coverage of Suits will be this week. And so, yeah, if you've been keeping up with Suits yourself, it's almost over. Check that out. And then we're going to talk about a little Pearson afterwards for that. And then you might have caught me on the RHIP YouTube page with Mari as we played the Traitors this last weekend. I won't spoil it for you, but it went well, you know. And so check that out. And then you, of course, can follow me on Twitter at Chappelle's_show to keep up with all the podcasting I'm doing and more. But you all, for LaTanya, for Mari, and myself, please tune into The Connect next week when we talk about The Color Purple, the 2023 version of The Color Purple, the musical, in films, wherever you are right now. So check that out, and then come back and meet us to talk about it next time. Until then, catch us on YouTube. Peace out. Bye.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash. Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.